Hey, good morning, the world of executive athletes, and want to thank you for coming back to our seventh podcast here. We've had actually a lot of really good feedback from everyone else, and want to thank everyone for listening. Each episode continues to grow bigger and bigger and is getting more viral. So thanks, everyone. Keep on sharing. Make sure that you're subscribing to the podcast, and you will continue to get some amazing content. This week's guest is probably the brains behind a lot of the stuff that we do. She's very unique in terms of her writing, in terms of her style, in terms of what she does to get exposure to probably the epitome of the executive athlete. Her name's Alex Schitello, and she is a communications expert, passionate runner, and is the owner of Endurance Racing Magazine, or Endurance and Fitness Magazine. And it's a unique online magazine. I believe there's some print editions as well. But she really delves into a number of the issues that the layman actually can really connect with, but also to the endurance athlete as well. And there's sort of the fine line between the ultra endurance athlete of that's all they do for a living, and those of us who want to be the endurance athlete, to someone who just actually wants to get off the couch. But I think, Alex is very good at bringing that to, again, layman's terms, in terms of running, in terms of writing, in terms of being an athlete. In addition, she's actually, in her day job, she's actually directing multi-phase long-term projects with FEMA. She works in strategic communications, does a lot of number of surveys, messaging, and branding development, which I think all of us can need, and she could probably have a side job helping individuals do that as well. But she's been doing this for over 25 years. In addition to that, she's a highly passionate runner. If you follow her on Facebook or on any of her social media, she's always out there, and she's no different than any of us. She runs into her own injuries and her own struggles, but always seems to power through them. So Alex, thank you for coming on board, and we'd love to just get a quick, you can give us your 5,000 foot overview and intro. So welcome aboard.
Thank you. I really appreciate that you asked me to come on your podcast, and it's a real honor. I started running when I was 14 years old, and I actually started off as a sprinter and a hurdler and did that for a number of years. And for some reason, my senior year in high school, which was many, 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 many years ago, I joined cross country and started running distance, and I fell in love with it and have been doing it ever since. My sweet spot are 10 milers and half marathons, mostly because, it's easy to count to 10 and 13, right? Once you get beyond that, it really gets difficult. I think, everyone's body is different. And I found for me that the marathons and the longer and distance stuff, happens to, damage me a little bit more, but for me, I love the challenge of actually seeing if I can still do it. So, that's kind of how I look at it. I started Endurance Sports and Fitness Magazine about 10 years ago, and it wasn't originally called that. It was originally called Runners Illustrated, and then through the years, it changed names a couple of times. My magazine was also called Endurance Racing Magazine for a number of years, and then I did a survey, and people liked Endurance Sports and Fitness Magazine, and while that's a long name, people related more to the sport. They wanted something that was for everybody, and they felt that endurance racing was just too much for like the elite endurance runners, and there are a lot of endurance racers out there, endurance athletes out there, that they run maybe one or two races a year. They are middle to the back of the pack or pack types. They enjoy the sport and suffer the same ills that the elite racers do. And so I've kind of catered my magazine to everybody. And, even though I'm not consistently an endurance athlete, I still understand the struggle and everything behind it. And the people that I'm blessed to have, some folks that are past endurance athletes that write for me on a pretty consistent basis, that also provide really great experience and color commentary to the magazine, so that I can bring the full spectrum of experience to this magazine. And to your point, Ken, I also do work full-time for a marketing firm that does work for FEMA, and I've been doing this, now for 6 or 7 years with this particular project that I'm working on, and really love what I do. So,
no, that's amazing. And it's, you know, endurance. Well, let's jump back to the magazine. And, you know, how did you, what drew you to the endurance sports world?
Oddly, it wasn't really anything to do with endurance sports. I was, in the early 2000s, I was publishing magazines for a living. And I was starting to look at how associations could incorporate blogs into their communications best practices. So I figured, well, I'm going to start a blog. And I started a blog called Tight Hams because I generally have this like left tight hamstring. Long story short, I've ended up having like a hip problem, not a hamstring, my whole life. And I never even knew that. But anyway, that's kind of a odd aside. But so I started writing for Tight Hams, and I started just writing articles about running. And in 2004, I wrote a blog about how I ran the San Diego Marathon pregnant. Now, I didn't design my marathon plan that way. It just kind of happened. So I ran a couple months pregnant, and I wrote this blog about it. And I was shocked at how many women from around the world started writing me about it. Because I think, you know, we're talking now 15 years ago when I wrote this blog, 14 years ago. And even as recent as that, women have still been kind of ostracized for running pregnant, and the whole pregnancy gig and athleticism has just been something that people are still kind of grasping. And I think it, in a way, started a mini movement. And then after that blog came out, I started, you know, doing shoe reviews and just writing about things that I liked. And then decided to develop a website called Runners Illustrated. And I literally put that up online, and I got contacted by a guy named Andrew Bowen. For years, I've been telling the same story. He writes me, he lives in New Zealand, and he's running this 1400 kilometer race, and he wants me to cover it. And I said, you're running how far and why? You know, and he became one of the first of many, many athletes that started to contact me to say, hey, you know, there's nothing out there about endurance running. Can you cover something longer than the marathon? And I had no idea about Badwater, the Keys 100. I had no idea about these long endurance races. I had no idea that there were endurance triathlons. Like, I had literally had no clue. I had lived in a world of, you know, marathon and below. I never had gone marathon and beyond. And, you know, I have to say, it was a thrill. Lisa Smith-Batchen contacted me. Marshall Ulrich contacted me. I mean, I had some of the most famous runners in the world. I was talking with Dean Karnazes on a regular basis. I mean, it was pretty cool. Like, I started to really... and these people are coming to me. I don't even know these people at first. And so I have these very famous and very well-known and wonderful athletes coming to me. And then I started to work with a gentleman by the name of Wayne Kurtz, who's probably one of the most epic athletes I've ever met. I always say that Wayne is one of these guys that writes books on planes and runs 11 businesses at once. Oh, and at the same time, you know, he's training for a DECA and will do, you know, 10 races this year. He's just an unbelievable human being. And he and I kind of made this mini board, and we met. He lives in Pittsburgh, and I live in the DC area, and we drove 2 hours towards each other, met in a restaurant somewhere, in the middle of, you know, Pennsylvania near the Maryland border. And we figured what would be the name of a magazine if we were going to publish it. And we decided on Endurance Racing Magazine at the time. And that was, gosh, that was about 8 years ago. So I published my original title for a number of years, just as a magazine blog, you know, just it kind of looked like the New York Times. And then we decided to make something a little bit more official. And we kind of rode that horse for a long time. Endurance Racing Magazine did a very good job. But as I mentioned, after a while, we were not, you know, meeting the expectations of some of the more lay athletes that don't run across the Gobi Desert, you know, or don't, you know, run halfway around the world for a cause. They wanted to just have articles on the typical 50K, 100 miler, you know, and then we started to branch into the more real aspects of the mental preparation for running. What kind of nutrition do you need? How do different athletes, you know, eat? Like, I've covered some athletes that, you know, still drink Coke and eat candy bars when they run, all the way down to others that only eat a vegan diet. So it's a very interesting range of people who have a very interesting range of diet while they're running, and you have to do what works for you. So we just started covering what I would call the more mainstream type of articles. And in 2016, I launched Endurance Sports and Fitness Magazine. And in 2017, I started to offer it as a print publication for those who wanted to have it in print. So that's kind of the evolution of how the magazine got to where it is.
That's amazing. And, you know, in doing this with a full-time job, you know, how do you handle that? How do you handle a passion project like we were talking earlier with working 40 hours a week? I think many of us do that. I know that's what I do as well. But, you know, how do you find the balance in pulling that together?
You know, that's in my DNA. And I think that a lot of our audience for endurance athletes might understand that, because we're capable of working 40-50 hours in a week, and juggling family, home, and training and other side projects just kind of becomes part of who we are. I like to be busy. My job, fortunately, I'm able to use both the left and right side of my brain. But what I love about the Endurance Sports and Fitness Magazine is that I really get to leverage my own voice, because a lot of what I do for FEMA is I'm really helping FEMA with their voice. So this kind of gets to be like my thing. You know what I mean? And
right.
I love it for that. But I also love that it's other people's things. There was a time that, you know, there have been a couple of times that I was thinking about maybe closing the magazine down because it was getting to be a little bit too much. And I had people contact me and say, please don't, it's all I've got, you know, to read about, you know, athletes that are like me. And, you know, and you have to understand too, my magazine doesn't cover like, you know, just people who are athletes. I cover, oh my gosh, I have so many folks that have overcome addiction or obesity or disease. Some of them are still running with disease, and or they're paralyzed and they compete as Paralympics, or, you know, or Paralympians, I should say. And they run the gamut of people that are, you know, have, you know, kind of suffered real life issues and look to endurance running as whatever you want to call it, escape, a way to feel good about yourself, help build up your psyche, you know, build your ego, build strength, help you be physically strong. All of those things that we even do this sport for, because this sport is for the individual. I mean, yeah, other people, we like to follow what other people are doing. But at the end of the day, I always tell myself, Alex, if you run the slowest race in the world, nobody is going to care. If you say, look, I ran in 100-miler today, they're going to be like, I don't care if it took you 5 days. You ran in 100-miler. You know what I mean? And I think that that's really what the sport's about. So, you know, and frankly, that's why I'm so in love with it and the people that I get to work with, because I get it. I get that need to fill your time. And so I'm able to do this and juggle, and I love the challenge of doing it. Yes, there are times when I'm completely overwhelmed and it's a little too much. And fortunately, because I run this magazine, I can adjust schedules if I need to kind of help me get through some of the tough periods, like when my work with FEMA gets really tough. And that's fine. That's just part of juggling anything in life.
No, it is. You know, and you alluded to a theme that I always say, probably most people I talk to, is, you know, endurance sports. I think it's perfect there. You know, you're either running from something or running to something, right? And I think it's moving meditation. It's an amazing opportunity to just sort of get out and either get in your own head or get out of your own head. I don't know. Sometimes I'm in my own head too much when I do this stuff, and sometimes I'm out of my head when I'm doing this stuff. And I think it's one of those things that allows you, you know, for an hour or two or 20 or 30 or 80, it allows you to go in and out of different phases there. And I think, you know, as you start getting better, or not even getting better, like you said, just the fact that you're out there and going for it is all that really matters. And I think even the elite guys will say the same thing, or the elite people, they'll say the same thing. You know, the only difference between them and us is they just go a little bit faster. But other than that, they're doing, you know, it's the same things that they're dealing with. It's push ourselves to see what we can and what we can't do. Yeah. Let's step into, you know, some of the questions I sent off to you earlier. You know, you're an entrepreneur, you know, a kick-ass master's athlete, a mentor to many. Throughout your career, what do you think makes people successful as an athlete or as someone who's, you know, an executive or a professional?
You know, it really comes, I was thinking about this over the weekend, and you know, I have to say that it's our minds that make us, you know. And the reason I say that is because over the past, especially, I just feel like over the past 6 months, I've covered a bunch of really stunning athletes in the 40 to 60 year age range who have really embraced why, you know, I mean, our bodies can only do so much, but with the help of our minds, we can do so much more. And I'm sure you've experienced this because you said you've run, you know, sometimes you've been competing and you're too much in your head. You know, how many times have you had that run where your mind makes you crazy or you're thinking about something and it just messes up your run, you know? And there are times that I'm literally fighting myself the whole time that I'm running because either I don't feel like running or I wanted to go out on Friday instead of, you know, getting up early on Saturday and training. And why am I doing this? Like you kind of go through these phases where you're either feeling sorry for yourself or you're just kind of grumpy and you don't, or something bad happened to you or something disturbing happened and it's fighting against what you're trying to accomplish in terms of your own fitness. And being able to fight against that and whether it's meditation or, you know, the other day I ran about 7.5 miles and it was so hot out. I finally had to put my music in. I try to run without music because I try to really clear my head when I run. And I know this sounds sick, but I like to actually try to clear out those demons while I'm running and not have music cloud it. And then if I'm really feeling desperate, I will put in music and listen and just allow myself to roll into that because, when I'm done with my run, I feel so much more refreshed. Now, a lot of the athletes that I've interviewed as of late some of them don't really have a structured mental program. And literally, like some people have like a program that they've part of their training is, how am I going to be thinking about this run? What is going to be my mantra today when I run? What are the things that I'm going to be telling myself when I run or cycle or swim or whatever sport that we're doing? And I appreciate that they really want to do that. Others just really, they do try to meditate. Like you were mentioning meditation. Some of them really just try to go into themselves and say, I don't know what I'm going to run into today when I'm out in this long distance swim or this big, long, you know, uphill hike that I'm embracing today. But, you know, whatever happens, I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to let my body and mind experience it. So I really love that part of it. And I even bring that into my own personal life when it comes to work and trying to juggle all the things, family and schedules and my own training. And I think that the mental aspect of that has really just become, you know, your mind is your strongest asset, I say.
No, definitely. And after interviewing, you know, hundreds of endurance athletes, what do you think is a common theme that makes them tick? Or is there a common theme? Or is everyone doing it for different reasons?
I would probably say there are a couple of different camps when it comes to endurance athletes. So, you know, there are many that unfortunately fell prey to whether it was sexual abuse, alcoholism, bad family structure, abandonment, or whatever. These people grew up with a childhood that they want to be able to handle it in a way other than just sitting in a therapist's office. And so I think a lot of my athletes I find have come from internal struggles and they have found endurance running to be their way of cleansing their minds and their souls. It's been, somebody mentioned this to me a number of years ago about running Badwater because it's so hot. And she said to me, I love that this race strips me of everything that I have down to the point where I am mentally naked. And I thought, God, that's so powerful because I get that need.
Right.
And I love that. I love that she was able to say it. I love that other athletes also have expressed that same familiarity, especially with Badwater, because it's so hot. I think when you run in not favorable weather, you tend to, there are other things that happen to you and you might hallucinate a little bit. You have some things that happen to you and it becomes kind of this outer body experience. And so people really enjoy that. And then I have this other camp of people who they're so unbelievable. it doesn't matter where they came from or what affected them in life. They just started competing one day. It could have been a 5K. I have some athletes that literally have only 5K, one 10K, one half marathon, one marathon, and bam, off into the endurance world. And off they went.
Hey, Alex.
Competitors today. And they're just amazing. It's like they went almost to the edge of a diving board and just went bam.
Alex,
and then there are others
You were
for a little bit?
Yeah, for a second, but we're good.
Okay, I apologize about that. I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah, that's fine.
So I was just saying that there some of my athletes just kind of start from scratch and literally start running one day and they just don't stop. It's like Forrest Gump. They just never stop. They just go. And it's unbelievable. They never have nutritional issues. They're just like they just go and they just do it. And then I've got others that fell into the professional athlete scene where they've overcome a lot. And in fact, a few years ago, I interviewed a guy who was 50 and his big thing was he wanted to become a professional, you know, Ironman athlete and went to Kona and did the whole thing. And it was pretty unbelievable. So, I run the gamut of folks that have these different backgrounds and others just really love it. They just love the fact that they run these big races. It gives them, it helps them with goal setting. It helps them with time management. It's just one of those things that they can control for themselves because let's face it, endurance, all the endurance sports that we do, it's for us, you know? So, anyway, I just have these like few like different, you know, right, buckets of types of athletes that I work with.
No, I think those are probably, but those are number of the three main buckets that we all fall into. What about, you know, what is it like, you know, publishing a magazine as a side hustle? Talk about that. You know, I think, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but you know, in terms of time, in terms of commitment, but also leveraging your passion. You know, because a lot of people are really afraid to start to really go after their passion. I talk to a lot of people about personal branding and always start a side hustle and start something that you're passionate about, because I think it really helps you with your day job, because number one, it makes you become more efficient. Number two, it's like you said earlier, sort of left brain, right brain, and you can be a bit creative. So talk to us about, you know, publishing magazine as a side hustle.
Yeah, you know, when I started doing this, I had to really think about how much time can I dedicate to this magazine? And coming from the publishing world, so obviously if you want to start a side hustle in anything, it's really important that you understand the climate that you're kind of jumping into. So, you know, for me, because I knew the publishing world and I knew what it took, I was perfectly comfortable with not publishing a monthly magazine, because that's a train that once you get on, you never stop. And I just don't have the time to literally publish a full-blown magazine every month. It's just too much time and effort, and I knew that going in. So I've always committed to the 6 times a year to actually publish a piece, because there's a whole publishing in and of itself has several steps. I have to not only solicit for all the folks that might be supporting the magazine, and that might be advertisers and subscribers. So I need to solicit for all of those types of folks and keep myself out there so people know who I am. But then I also need to find writers and other folks that want to participate with my magazine. And I've been very blessed that I've had some people come to me that just give me content. And I love that. I have paid writers in the past when I've had the budget, and I would love to continue to do that as I can, because I think that also brings, you know, different voices to the magazine. And then I have to manage a publishing schedule. So we have to write. I have an editor who I pay. I have to pay her to edit everything. And then I do the design and layout myself. And then I have to kind of maintain a schedule and develop a print ready product and work with all of the athletes on, did you give me a high enough resolution photo or any photo, you know? And then I just kind of decide how the magazine's going to look. Now, unlike most magazines, some magazines have a set schedule of what they're going to publish about every year. Now, I kind of do that, but I'm also very loosey-goosey with it. And the reason for that is because I sometimes cannot predict what's going to happen to me when I'm publishing an issue. And this happened actually in the last issue that I published. It was my first ever men's issue. And it just so happened that everyone I heard from, even though I had other women that were working on articles and so forth, they didn't come to me on time. So I figured, you know what? I've got a lot of really good, interesting, wonderful men. I'm just going to do a men's issue. And I have an adventure sport enthusiast on the cover, Josh Forrester. And I love that. So now to complement that, I'm going to do a women's issue. And for some reason, I also have a proliferation of females that kind of came to me, and they'll fit the timing for the July-August issue. So sometimes I have to adjust, but that's also part of business, right? You know, you think you're going to go on a certain path, and a lot of times you will get moved into a different direction, and you'll have to take a different path. But the goal for me is to be able to try to publish on time and on schedule as much as I can, and also realize that imperfection is part of the job, and that this is my side job, and I have to remind myself that everything else comes first. My job comes first. My family comes first. You know, all of that has to come first. And if I ever get to the point where I feel like there's absolutely no time for this magazine, then that means one of two things. I either shut it down or I change the way that I publish it, meaning I might, then I've thought about actually doing this, making it a monthly blog where I'm actually publishing on a more consistent basis every month or maybe every 2 weeks. And so I've been looking at that model as well, knowing that I still need to pay my editor and, you know, I've got other expenses, but, you know, and again, with any business, especially if you're starting a side job, you have to think about the different combinations of how you think your business is going to run. I did create a business plan way back in the day, but also with the way that I manage myself and my life, the business plan's nice, but it's so evolving, like constantly, that to keep something on a piece of paper somewhere is not always effective for me. I need to be able to have products and resources that I use so that when I'm talking to potential advertisers, they understand kind of like what the magazine is doing at any given time, and be able to kind of sell them on the fact that, yes, I've got, you know, about 100,000 people out there that are looking at the magazine in any given day, or publishing cycle. That's when I see a lot of upticks and hits to the website and so forth, that, you know, social media is growing, that, you know, that I'm showing growth through different behaviors. And that actually has proven to be more important for me, for my business development, than actually saying, oh, here's a little piece of paper that where I'm going to tell you what I think I'm going to be doing, because that will be changed in a month, because publishing constantly evolves.
So, right.
There you have it.
No, it's crazy. It's one of those things of, I sort of run my life in three buckets, right? It's my career, my family, and my fitness. And if either one of those starts really getting out of whack, it's time to, you know, to step back from one and really start focusing on the other. And I think, you know, you're doing a lot of the same things. That's what's important. And sort of, you know, the side hustle is, you know, is a fourth that, you know, can come and go as needed. I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot to be said about that. You know, you've had, you know, overcoming some of adversity as well in terms of funding for, you know, your magazine or overcoming injury. You know, we've seen you've had a number of, you know, some spinal issues and some either hip or knee issues. You know, how have you done overcoming those, you know, overcoming that adversity to keep on training?
Well, nobody likes to hear that they have to take time off.
Right.
But you have to take time off. That is the biggest secret. There's really no secret recipe to overcoming injury. You have to take time off. There's no other way to do it. You know, physical therapy is great, but there are some times when you literally have to stop doing what it was that injured you. Now, for me, I was blessed with a really bad cervical spine. And for many, many years, I had a labral tear in my hip that I had no idea that was there.
Wow.
I actually thought, well, as I mentioned, I thought I had this bad hamstring issue. And for years, I'm like, oh, my left hamstring is horrible. It bothers me all the time. I can't sprint anymore. And a number of years ago, actually, oddly enough, I had done my first trail race and I had made the podium. I was very proud of myself. And I decided, and this wasn't my smartest move ever, but I decided to go to a track workout that I had planned that afternoon. So I ran a race and then I decided to go to a track workout. And during that workout, I felt kind of funky. And then after that, I said, well, I probably wasn't very smart. Maybe I pulled something. And, you know, I started training up for a marathon and I was having so much trouble getting beyond like mile 15 or 16 because my calves would hurt me so much. And I thought I had compartment syndrome. I went, I went out to the Yellowstone half marathon in the Tetons that Lisa Smith Fashion manages. And she said, you know, I don't know, maybe you've got compartment syndrome. And I said, well, I don't know, it's odd because I just ran your race. And because I'm training for the Baltimore Marathon, I went for a 5-mile hike after that. And she said, oh, God, that's so weird. Like you took a little bit of, you took like an hour or two break and then you went out and did your thing again. I said, yeah, I'm capable of doing that. Like I can stop. And then, as long as I can stop for a little bit and start, I can go forever.
Right.
I said, yeah, that's just so weird. So anyway, long story short, I decided not to run the Baltimore Marathon. I ran the Baltimore half and finished that race. And I said, I'm going to the doctor. And it's at that point that I realized that I had a torn labral cup, and it wasn't minor. It was major. It was a very bad tear. And he said, you could have had this for 20 years. You know, I just can't tell, but it's really bad. We need to fix it. So I had to take some time off to fix that. And just when I was getting back on my feet 2 years ago, I did a short little 5-mile or short little 5K and woke up the day and my right arm was numb and I had herniated a disc in my neck and I had to fix, and yeah, it was fun. Then I had to deal with that because, you know, my own worst enemy. I refused to believe that my body couldn't heal itself. So I would, and the only reason I'm mentioning this is because I think some people have fallen into this, but you know, I pop a Vicodin and go for a run.
Right.
And I did that for a little bit and realized that probably wasn't too good. I also have to admit that I actually liked the Vicodin too. So I had a, you know, it was just a few weeks, but you know, I figured if that drug could get to me, you know, that really scared me. Don't mean to bring the opioid thing into this, but because a lot of us are having surgeries and we're being given these drugs, we have to be very, very, very careful because we, you know, unless you're tested and you know what you could get addicted to because there are tests for that now, you know, I had no idea I was going to like the Vicodin. I thought, oh, it's kind of fun. I can go to work. I can drive. I can, you know, I can run. And so anyway, I finally had the surgery done 6 months after my neck went. And even this year, as I was training, I was having some complications again. And I went to the doctor and he said, well, you have two other herniated discs in your neck. And I said, what? And instant tears. And he said, no, Alex, you don't understand. You've had these two herniated discs in your neck.
Right.
Okay. Your neck is just a mess. That's just the way you're built. You have a very straight neck. And you also have an annular tear in your lower back, but we won't focus on that for now. I'm like, oh, for God's sakes, you know. So anyway, it's just, you know, we're built the way we're built. He said, look, I encourage you to run. You're tall, you're thin, and you're blonde. For that particular, I don't know why he said, I don't know why the blonde hair was important, but whatever. I guess they've done studies on people with light eyes or whatever. And he said, you know, you should be running because it's good for fighting against osteoporosis. Just keep running. I'm not going to tell you to not keep running. Your herniation isn't that bad, but they are herniated.
Right.
And we didn't want to fix it when you had your other herniated disc because if they ain't broke, we don't fix it. I was like, oh, for God's sake. So, you know, nobody's perfect. You know, I'm sure half the people listening to this podcast one day are going to say, yeah, I've got this, I've got that, I've got the other thing. But we can't be stupid about our approach to running. I have a friend of mine who's got a very, very serious heart condition and he competes as a professional athlete.
Right.
And, you know, he just has to be careful. So I don't know. I mean, overcoming the adversity and injury has to do with being smart and just knowing that sometimes you have to take some time off. I took almost a year off between my two surgeries.
Wow.
And there wasn't much I could do about it.
No, exactly.
You know, I trained casually, but I really had to dial back. And you know what? Nobody missed me. You know, that's just the thing. We have to let our egos go sometimes. So I'm going to miss you if you're not out on every single race every weekend. You have to take care of yourself. Your body comes first because it's all you have. So that's kind of the new theme I've adopted. It might sound weak to some of the hardcore folks out there, but sometimes you really do have to rest.
I think there's strength in that, right? Versus just fighting through. You know, we're always told to fight through. And sometimes the fight needs to go in the other direction. It's, it's almost accepting yourself, right? A lot of times they say accept the pain. And I think sometimes you have to accept yourself and accept that, you know, your body is, like you said, the only place that you live. What about, you know, what role do you think athletics, health, or wellness plays in professional success?
Oh, a huge amount. I think my mental and physical endurance on the job is only advanced through endurance running and training. I I think it makes me a better person, not only at my job, because again, when you're type A, I know myself well enough to know that
just being an athlete really helps me be a better manager, because I have to manage myself and look for my own hiccups and my own imperfections, and I need to be able to mitigate for when I'm looking for other people. You know, not everybody's perfect on the job, right? So we have to be able to help each other through our hard times.
Right. No, it's huge. And I think, you know, the endurance side of it, forces you or not forces you, but it just allows you to keep on pushing versus just throwing your hands in the air.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I'm calmer as a result. I just think that I'm a calmer, more collected person. And for me, and it's always been this way, I know a lot of people like to work out in the morning. For me, I love to get up, work, go home, exercise, and then start the other half of my day, which is, you know, the kids and the family and all that stuff. It just helps me break up my day and makes me I'm a lot better with my kids after I've exercised. I'm a lot better with my husband. I'm a lot better just being able to mitigate for anything that might go on in the homestead. And I don't know, it works for me.
Right. No, I'm a big fan of working out at lunch, because then it starts your day all over again. It's, you know, you get up, you do your thing in the morning, you help, you know, my wife has to go into the office, so I help a lot of the kids get out of the house, make lunches and all that stuff. And, you know, your noontime workout or lunchtime workout is your own time, but then allows you to restart your day. If you're telling, you know, a budding athlete or a master's athlete that's really looking to get to the next level in performance, you know, what would you tell him or her?
Well, since I'm a certified running trainer, I would tell them the same thing that my coaches have always told me, which is you have to make slow incremental improvements in your in your fitness over time. So, you know, if you think you're going to be able to effectively train for a marathon in 1 month when you haven't done it before, I would suggest that you think about pushing back your marathon date. There are always those athletes that literally get up out of bed and go do something phenomenal, and you know, that's like 0.000001 of the population. Most of us have to, and I always tell people, you know, and it's easier for me to say this since I'm a woman, but you gestate a baby in 9 months, okay? You can't cheat the system. You can't say, well, I want to have a baby in 5 months. You can't do that. You know, and so I'm able to apply that to training. There are certain things you just can't do if you don't give yourself enough time. And the other thing too that I would say to budding athletes, especially if you're older, is that cross training is really the way to go. Because I see so many, especially runners, I don't see this so much with cyclists, although I do see it with swimmers too, a lot of injuries from the same repetitive movement over and over and over and over and over again, with not knowing how to effectively stretch or recover. And when I mean recover, I mean rest or eat appropriately for your body type and, you know, how God made you. You know, so, and a lot of people don't know that at first. I really think most of athleticism is error. You know, it's like, you know, when they say you do trial and error, it's mostly error and mistakes and failures that help make us better. So, you know, if you want to train for a race really fast and you go ahead and do it and you end up injured, you'll learn from that, you know, because that's probably what's going to happen. And the injury won't be right away, right? It's going to happen. We've all experienced this. It'll happen 5 years down the road where you already had injured yourself at that marathon that you trained too fast for, and it'll hit you at the weirdest time because we just don't know what we don't know. And it's running like evolution is a process, right? And it happens very, very slow. And there's a concept in training called progressive overload, which means, you know, when most people train for a marathon, you know, you run 8 miles 1 week, and the next mile you run, you know, or the next weekend you run, you know, one or two more miles more. That progressive overload is meant to help our body understand the stresses that we're putting on it in a very slow and progressive way. And I hate to say it, but like, that's the way you train for a marathon. You can't go out and run 5 miles and run 15, then I don't know, run a race and then be chaotic about it. All training has a certain methodology. And again, for all of us that are, you know, in our 40s and older, it just gets harder to maintain our level of fitness by doing repetitive motion. So again, the cross training and all of that is important too. And I hate to say this, for me, I run better when I run less.
Mm.
So I cross train more than I endurance train, you know, endurance run. In fact, I have some of my endurance athletes, the only time they ever run now is when they're doing a triathlon. They don't run anymore. They don't need it. Their body knows what to do. And that's the other thing too, to a new budding athlete. Over the years, you'll just be like, for me, like running 10 miles is now an innate behavior. Mm-hmm. Because I've done it for so long that my body knows what to do. It may not feel good every time I do it, but you know, and I have friends of mine, there's a gentleman by the name of Dolph Hawk, who is a pretty well-known endurance triathlete. And he said to me, you know, doing a Ironman distance triathlon, I do that in my sleep. I don't even think about it. I've done them for 20 years. My body just knows what to do. So for new athletes, your body will eventually figure it out, but you have to allow yourself time. You have to allow yourself to evolve.
No, I'm a big fan of cross training. I think, you know, I love to do CrossFit workouts, and people are like, you do CrossFit. Actually, I was doing CrossFit workouts before CrossFit was CrossFit. And I think that was a lot of my success when I was bike racing, and I'm still doing it with, I'm doing adventure racing stuff. I do, you know, probably 4 or 5 CrossFit workouts a week and then ride my bike or run or do something else to supplement it. But I think when I'm only doing endurance training, I can feel my body breaking down, and I can feel, you know, my spine is supporting me and not the muscles around my spine are supporting me. And I think there's a lot to be said about staying strong, especially as you get older. I think you can get away with it when you're younger, but you know, once you start hitting your 40s, you have to stay strong and have to focus on strength and flexibility and mobility. And I think those are some of the keys that a lot of people, that's when you start really getting injured. I've noticed is if I don't focus on each one of those steps, it makes a tremendous difference in what I'm doing or what I'm not doing.
And I was going to add too, the one, I think, main cause of injury for most people I've noticed, especially as we get older, is if we don't take care of our hips. Mm-hmm. There's something about, you know, the hip is kind of like the central zone for our bodies, right? Because it's where our spine ends and where our legs begin. And if that central part of your body is not, is not taken well, you know, care of, so there's, you know, we have to, even stretching something like your psoas muscle, which is deep buried into like the bowels of your stomach, and it's kind of like, you know, near the top of where your hip flexors start, you know, there are so many minor injuries that can begin just from your hips, which are the root to the rest of your leg. And so I've always found that especially as I'm getting older, that to maintain hip strength is really, really important. I mean, I'm sure part of the reasons why I had a really bad labral tear is because I know that anatomically, I have a hip that's kind of cocked forward a little bit, and there's only so many times you can go to the chiropractor. I mean, I have anatomic imperfections, and most of us do. So I didn't compensate for it correctly, and through time, I wore it out. I had to get it repaired. And we don't want to be replacing body parts too soon either. Because that's like, first of all, it's a big industry these days. And I think to preserve our knees and to preserve our hips, we do need to take care of ourselves.
No, you totally do. And you know, like you said, it's pretty funny. I had plantar fasciitis a couple of years ago, and people realize that you don't think that your whole body's connected, but they were focusing on tightness of my shoulders because your feet is the bottom of the kinetic chain, and it all starts from, you know, pretty much starts from the top or vice versa. It's really, you know, focus on your body as a whole. A few quick questions here. I sort of like to call it rapid fire questions headed into closing here. You know, what's your favorite piece of gear that you use?
My Camelback and my running shoes.
Nice. What about, do you follow any specific diet?
No.
Yeah, neither do I.
I mean, and I don't mean to say like, no, you know, I mean, but I am an omnivore. I'm not a vegan. However, I do prescribe to the plant-based diet. I mean, I think it's very, very important. And I think it's important to really watch what you eat, which I do. I do watch what I eat. I don't have a high junk food diet, but I don't, I don't monitor, aside from that, I don't really monitor too much. I'm just very, very careful, mm-hmm. But I also know what works for me now. After trial and error, I did try a vegan diet and it didn't work for me. And I did try, I'm going no carbs. That was a colossal failure. And I did try some other things too, that my body just said, no, sorry. So, and also too, if people are interested, there's something called, the diet for your blood type. And it's just very interesting. If you look at your blood type, some of the things that they recommend, too, just to kind of see, oh, am I eating some of those things that may cause inflammation? Cause I have to say on the diet front, if you eat something that you know causes inflammation, like dairy, for example, I think dairy is everybody's enemy, even if you can digest it or not. If that causes inflammation, the only thing I can say to you is then stop eating it. Because if you never ate dairy again, we would all survive.
Right.
And I'm saying this as an Italian who loves cheese, but it's just very, very important to know that if there are certain foods that you probably should cut from your diet, and there's usually for most of us like a couple of them, not tons, not you have to change your diet, but figure out what they are and just don't eat them. Especially when you're training. So that you can go 6 months without eating, I'm just going to say something silly like strawberries or blueberries. I think strawberries actually don't work for me. I don't feel well after I eat them. Then I won't eat them. Just don't eat them. It's really that simple. But you know what? I do have to say that because the vegan movement is kind of moving right now, it is of interest to me. And I also think environmentally it's good for the planet. So I would love to be able to adopt more of it if I could, because I think it's probably better for all of us. But for right now, I'm just not following the diet.
No, I know a lot of athletes, and I ask this question to everyone, and a lot of, so far everyone, except for one that's purely a vegan, has been sort of everything in moderation. It's really only, that's what I've found that is successful. I think we're chatting a little bit earlier, some athletes who survive on the pure vegan diet and some athletes who survive on Coke and Snickers bars. And I think really as you get into this and you get more focused on being an athlete, what works and what doesn't work. I know, 2 days into a race that you need a Coke and a Snickers bar because that's sort of that's your reward so far for racing. Right. And it just, it tastes good and it just keeps you. It keeps you rolling versus beating yourself up looking for, your vegan energy bar that you can't find in the convenience store, that type of stuff. I think, you do this, some of it for the reward of it. And what about, what was your workout today or what will your workout be?
My workout today is going to be cross training. We're going to focus on actually doing some hip flexor stuff. Believe it or not, I've gone back to 1992 and the late 80s, where I actually do step aerobics classes now. So, and I do them in my basement. I just go onto YouTube. I have the step and I do these step classes. First of all, they're low impact, but they're all based on your stepping. So you're working on your hips and you're working on your hamstrings. And then I introduce weights into it. So I try to do that once or twice a week, especially when it's oppressively hot out, because I have found that running in the oppressive heat doesn't do much for me. If I can't get out and do a run before it gets too hot, then I'll just switch my workout days. But that'll be my workout tonight.
Nice. No, good stuff. And where can everyone find you?
You can find me in several places. I am on Facebook. Endurance Sports and Fitness Magazine also has its own page. And the magazine's website is endurancesportsandfitness.com. You can email me at alix@endurancesportsandfitness.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn. You can find me there. So hopefully that'll give you a few places.
Perfect. No, and Alex, I want to thank you for taking the time today to be on the podcast. I think, you've broken down a lot of myths and mystery behind the endurance sports world and, gave us a snapshot into how you pull everything off. So thank you very much for being part of that.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. Thank you so much, Ken.
Great. No. And if anyone has any questions, comments, concerns, feel free to email me at ken@executiveathletes.com, and hope you enjoyed this episode and we'll just keep charging forward. Have a great afternoon.